It's time to question the man who asks questions. Interview number 100. Eric Wolf, in the special anniversary episode, Brother Wolf is interviewed by his audience. This is Judith Black in Marblehead, Massachusetts. If you want to just dive into your storytelling and come out for a whole week, look at www.tellingstoriestochildren.com. But more importantly, tune in to episode 100 with Brother Howard!
Thank you, my dear brother. What a beautiful soul.
All children love stories.
Folk tales, they are messages from our ancestors.
Then you have come to the right place.
We will have a storyteller in every school.
Storytelling can teach.
You have that openness of a child.
Good on you, Eric, for doing what you're doing.
That's a great question.
Thank you. I'm inspired just to be here. I'm really honored to be here.
We tell stories.
Know yourself.
Follow your passion.
And live with grace.
Hi, and welcome to the Art of Storytelling show, where we examine storytelling from every angle. What is storytelling? Why is it so important in our modern world? And why listen to this storytelling podcast? Well, because storytelling is about opening our hearts out into the world, opening up new views into daily living, into the lives around us, the histories and cultures, our very relationship to the living planet. It can open new vistas well beyond old horizons, even perhaps beyond into ancient worlds. In this fast-paced world, often we can easily forget the simple things that make us human, the very things that celebrate our aliveness, our humanity. This podcast is a journey into this world of storytelling. Along its path, you'll discover stories that stir up memories, quirk new thoughts, perhaps even awaken deep emotions. For storytelling is both the path to the treasure and the treasure itself. Hello. My name is Robert Kikuchi Ngoho. I, too, am a storyteller, along with my wife, Nancy Wong, of Ethnotech. And we have a path and a treasure that you might be interested in. It's called the Nuance Storytelling Delegation to China. On September 10th through the 26th of 2010, we invite you to join Ethnotech in story swapping, joining hands with and bending ears with our Chinese storytelling counterparts in the community of Gensun, a 600-year-old traditional storytelling village. Contact Ethnotech at www.ethnotech.org. That's www.ethnotech.org. Well, as any good story always brings the listener back home, we now bring you back home to this podcast, The Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf.
Now let me tell you about our guest, Brother Wolf. Brother Wolf was born in the Adirondack Mountains to the first pair of wolves to re-inhabit that region. Sadly, as a cub, he was lost in a snowstorm, never to see his wolf parents again. He was, however, discovered by a kindly couple hiking through the woods. That couple had always wanted a child, but could not have any children of their own. They took the lone wolf cub home and raised him as a human, teaching him to walk on two legs, roll over, heel, and, of course, speak. Eric's ability to speak soon turned toward storytelling. The only drawback is that Eric expects a treat every time he tells a tale. He lived with his adopted family peaceably for years until he was kidnapped by pirates. Forced to leave behind his quiet and reclusive life, he took to his new lifestyle with great zest. Enjoying world travel and going to faraway places was exciting, but the prospect of killing people seemed like a lousy way to live. So, Eric volunteered to work in the ship's kitchen, serving as a mess cook, asking the pirates to spare only a few able-bodied survivors to help him with potato peeling. Eric's lack of thumbs had always made potato peeling difficult. He later co-founded the Irish Potato Company, with over 10,000 professional peelers on staff, but the effort failed due to language limitations among the workforce and thumb envy. He fled creditors to New York City, where he was taken in by street gangs, whom he convinced he was a werehuman, and werehumans are always useful to street gangs. Adopted by a new family, Eric lived a reformed life ever since, except for the incident with the chief of the NYC police and the time he saved a jetliner and the time he got a speeding ticket for sledding. Oh, and he has performed as a storyteller at such places as Columbia University, Kings Island Amusement Park, the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, and the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. If you haven't guessed, this is Bill Lepp, five-time champion of the West Virginia Liars Contest, good friend of Eric's, and professional storyteller to boot. If you want more information about me, please visit my website at www.leppstorytelling.com. Hope to have a new CD out this fall, and I'm looking forward to a great summer and fall of storytelling.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you, Robert. And thank you, Bill, so much for taking the time to call in and record those opening segments. I really appreciate it. Now we go straight to my story. This story was recorded in 2007 as a part of the CD Tall Tales for the Dyslexic New Yorker. When I was a young child, I did not learn to read right away. I really wanted to learn to read. I really wanted to know the meaning of the words on the page. And though I was so heartfelt and passionate in my desire to learn the art of reading and writing, it escaped me for many years, until at least third and fourth grade. But during that time, when I was young, my little sister came into the world. I was 4 when she was born. And I saw it as my job, my role in life, to be the best older brother that I could be. And so I worked so hard to make sure that everything was perfect for her, that she had the best food, that she was very comfortable, that if she was crying, my parents came to her right away. And during this time, I became a little fixated on her birthdays. Now, the first birthday, when you're 1, it doesn't really matter too much. But when you're two, you think, oh, it's a pretty box. And when you're 3, you rip the wrapping paper off and you think, wow, thanks, Mom and Dad, for giving me this wrapping paper, and you're so excited. But when you're 4, oh, that's the first birthday that matters. Because when you're 4, you know there's something in that box. Something you wanted. And you are thrilled. You are thrilled to open that box and look inside. So I decided, as the 8-year-old older brother that I was, that I would make the most amazing birthday party that's ever happened for any 4-year-old girl in the world. So I told my mom and dad that this was my goal, and they thought it was a good thing. And they encouraged me, and they helped me to get the invitations out. They wrote all the invitations, and I just was a part of drawing the pictures, the invitations. And they helped me to arrange the day, and they helped me to call and make sure people were coming. And they helped me to set up the apartment. And, well, you know, my apartment in New York City, it was a first-floor apartment. It's important you understand this for the story, that it was a first-floor apartment, and you could look out the windows and you could see the heads of people walking by, not their eyes, but just the tops of their hair as they walked by the apartment. There was a trench in front of the apartment building, and when you stepped out of the door of the apartment building, you actually had to walk over this stone path that was over the trench. So you could walk to the door, but you couldn't get to the windows. Now, in my apartment building, we had a number of very interesting characters. One of them was a Mr. Yang. Mr. Yang was a very sweet man. He was Chinese, born in China, immigrated to the United States, and Mr. Yang believed in the principle of generosity. He had a Chinese character on the front of his door that meant generosity. And he always told us that if we ever needed anything, all we had to do was come into his apartment and take it. In fact, if you opened the door of his apartment, you could look inside and you could see right there, it said in English, "Please, take what you need." Now, everyone in the apartment building always kept the front door locked for Mr. Yang. We always kept it locked because we were worried that people from the outside would come in. Now, across the hall from Mr. Yang, there was an Aunt Dee. Aunt Dee was the sweetest lady. She could make anything, but she was completely blind. She would make bread, and oh, it smells so good, and she would make cakes, and oh, and she said in the summer she made lemonade and she'd bring it out for the kids who were playing on the street. Oh, she was so wonderful. But Aunt Dee, as a blind person, was terrified of fire and robbery. If she smelled smoke, she would call the New York City Fire Department. Now, you understand that in a building that is about 12 stories tall with 4 apartments per floor, the chance of smoke on any given day is pretty high. I mean, you're making some toast in the toaster, you forget about it, and there's some smoke coming out of the toaster. You burn something, and you're frying it up. Well, Aunt Dee's nose was amazing. She could just smell that smoke. And as soon as she smelled the smoke, she would call the fire department and say, get down here right now. There's a fire going on in this apartment. Get down here right now. And the fire department, the New York City Fire Department, they never figured out that Aunt Dee was responsible for 5% of their call volume on any given week. Above my apartment, there was an old crotchety man who was bald and his face was all wrinkled. His name was Mr. Limekiller. Now, Mr. Limekiller was a vet. He was a vet from the Great War. Not the Vietnam War, not the Korean War, not World War II. No, no, no. He was a vet from World War I. We would be playing in front of the apartment building, tag or some other game. He would stick his head out of the window and he would look at us and he'd say, kids, have you seen any filthy Germans? And we would look at him and say, oh, no, 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 no. Now, my family was German. And we just said, no, 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 Mr. Limekiller, we haven't seen any Germans. Well, if you do, let me know, because I'm going to get them. So my dad was a little worried about Mr. Limekiller, and he went upstairs and checked in on all his stuff. He saw that Mr. Limekiller had 3 grenades and a gun, but he also saw that the gun was loaded with blanks and the grenades weren't real. So he told my mom not to worry about it, and my mom, who had been a little nervous about Mr. Limekiller before then, relaxed. My mom told me that Aunt Dee would be glad to help me bake a cake, and I was so excited about that. So the day of the party, the morning of the party, I got up early and I went over to Aunt Dee's to help make the cake. And I was so thrilled. So Aunt Dee had some new containers that she had just gotten for her baking supplies. And she asked me to go get the stuff. So I went in there and she said, now first go get the sugar. So I went in there and I looked for the sugar and I saw it. There it was. I couldn't remember. I think S-A-L-T, must be sugar. So I took the sugar in and I gave it to her. How much sugar do we put in? And she said, 5 tablespoons. All right, 5 tablespoons. Ah, that's great. Now she said to go get the salt. So I went in there to get the salt. Salt, S-U-G, that must be the salt. So I brought it. How much salt do we put in? 3 teaspoons. Okay, 3 teaspoons. Now go get the flour. So I went in to get the flour. Oh, the flour. Let's see, how do you spell flour? B-A-K. Got that in there? I took the flour and I opened it up. How much flour do you put in? 5 cups. I put 5 cups of flour in. And then she said, now, don't forget the baking soda. Baking soda. So I went in there, I was looking. There's F-L, baking soda. Must be baking soda. So I got it, and I brought it in. How much baking soda do you put in? Just a couple teaspoons. Oh, that's great. And then we mixed the eggs and the milk. Milk was easy, I know milk. And then we had some chocolate. Oh, that was easy. I just had a few test samples, you know. And we mixed that all together, and oh, it looked really good. And we put it in the oven. Oh, it smelled really good. And she said, you know, you're not allowed to taste it. No tasting. Okay, okay, okay. So I didn't taste it, and I didn't even touch the batter. And it was just in the oven. It smelled so good. We got it out. We let it cool. And then we got the frosting from the can, because we were in a hurry. I got the frosting can and covered it up real good. And she said, now, your mom said you should take it down, but there's no candles. So I want you to go by Mr. Young's. Go by Mr. Young's and pick up some candles. So I got the cake on a big platter, and I kind of walked down the hall, a little heavy for my 8-year-old body, but I managed it down the hall. And I got in front of Mr. Young's, and I put the cake down, and I opened the door, and I looked inside, and I knew the word candle. I could recognize it. And I saw right there next to the door was a big box. It was about half as tall as me, and it said, candles. And they were from Rome. And it said, plus, plus, underneath the candle. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So I took that box, and I pulled out the candles. And they were like maybe 3 feet tall with long wicks on them. I thought, these are great. So I took the candles, and I put them in the cake. I put one in for each birthday, and I had one left over, so I put that one in too. So then I lift the whole cake up and I carried it down the hall. And I came into my own apartment and they were singing happy birthday to you. I said, should I bring the cake in? My mom said, yes, yes, bring the cake in. But there's a stove clicker right there and go ahead and light the candles. So I took that stove clicker. It's a little red handled thing and you click it and the flame comes out. And I clicked it and I put it up to each candle and they started hissing. Wow, they were cool candles. They hissed. I picked up the cake and I carried it into the dining room. Well, everybody was singing happy birthday, and they all stopped when I came in. They must have really liked that cake. And they all looked at me, and my dad said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm bringing the cake. And I put it down right there. My dad said, those aren't candles. I said, what do you mean they're not candles? They're from Rome. They're special candles. And right then, the first one went off. It went like this. Out the window, up 17 stories. Well, with that, pandemonium broke out. The kids started screaming. The parents dived underneath the furniture. My dad said, "What? What? Stop, stop." The other one went off. Hit the wall. Boom. Hit the other wall. Hit the piano. Out the window, down the street, underneath some truck down there. Boom. Now, Aunt Dee is sitting in her apartment. She's sitting there quietly doing some cleaning up from cooking the cake, and she smells something. Fire. Picks up the phone. New York City Fire Department, listen, you got to get over here right now. We got a big fire going on. I can smell the smoke. It's a big fire. It's a 5-alarm fire. I can smell. Wait, I can hear gunshots. I hear people screaming. They're dying. Quick, get the SWAT teams down here. Call the police. Meanwhile, in the apartment, everyone's ducking out of the way. Another firework goes off, swirls around in the air. Smoke. Fourth one heads out the window, comes back in the window, takes the kid's hat off, hits the wall, blows up. Boom! The last one remains, slowly smoldering. My dad, the brave man he is, jumps up. He says, "Don't worry, I have it." He grabs it by the base. It goes off. He's like the shuttle when it's lifting off the pad. It just carries them upwards, upwards, up to the ceiling, slam against the ceiling. He lets go. He slams back down onto the cake. Pieces of cake go flying everywhere, covering people's faces. The last rocket falls to the ground, smoke billowing through the apartment. It must have been a smoke rocket of some kind. Smoke just fills the whole apartment. We're all coughing. The kids are all whimpering. I want my mommy. The mommies are whimpering. I want my mommy too. The smoke slowly clears. All is quiet. My father, one half of his face covered with chocolate cake, says, "Is everybody okay?" Everyone's like, "Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good." Oh, right then we hear a voice.
"We have you surrounded. Come out with your hands up."
"What?" says my dad. "What?"
"This is the New York City police. We have you surrounded."
"What?" says my dad. He goes to the window. He says, "It's okay. It's okay. It's just an accident. It was just some fireworks. It was an accident. Don't worry about it." But above us, we hear a voice. "You filthy Germans, you'll never take me alive."
"Grandfather? Grandfather? Grandfather? Mr. Limekiller, would you... don't shoot him! He's my grandfather!"
"You filthy Germans! I'll get you!" The police are running everywhere.
"Don't shoot him! It's not loaded! It's not a gun! It's not loaded!"
Then Mr. Limekiller throws the hand grenades. Turns out they were real. They were real smoke grenades. The smoke grenades come flying out. Smoke fills the street. Again, all is quiet. The fire department arrives. Trucks pillow out.
"Seems like we have a situation here. Fire."
Water is turned on. My dad says, "There's no fire. There's no tire." 5 hoses hit him, filling the apartment with water. The whole table is lifted up and becomes like a raft in a flood. Children are gathered around each other, holding on to each other. One child is bent and praying that everything works out. "Please let him live to see his 6th birthday. Please, please." I have back in my house a copy of the New York Post, the front page. And on that page, you can see my father surrounded by the chief of the New York City Police Department and the chief of the New York City Fire Department. And they're looking at him like he should control his children more. And that he should really know where they are and what they're doing at all times. My mother has reached across and taken a piece of cake off my father's face and has put it into her mouth, and her mouth has formed a grimace that can only be seen in one who has never tasted salted cake before. And my little sister is leaning over, and she is whispering into my ear. She is whispering into my ear as I look into the camera's eye. She's whispering in my ear, "That was the best birthday party ever."
This is Ann Shimojima from Morton Grove, Illinois. Congratulations on your 100th show, and thank you for the good work that you are doing for storytelling. I am in awe of all of the storytellers and all of the wonderful topics that you are providing for your listeners. You are doing such important work. Thank you, and thank you again.
Thank you, Anne, so much for calling in and showing your appreciation. This episode marks the 100th episode of The Art of Storytelling. And as such, I really wanted to make it a celebratory episode. I wanted to make it something different, something unique. And so I have invited my audience to call in. If you didn't get an invitation and you're going, I would love to call in. Well, don't worry. There'll be other opportunities coming up. But you have to be on the mailing list to get the opportunities. You have to be paying attention to the blog to get the opportunities. And Anne, I just want to really appreciate that you called in. And without you and without people like you, this show really wouldn't have reached the level of success it has reached. Not only with 100 interviews, but with over, at this point, 115,000 downloads, of which about 30% of them are international downloads. People from China, Australia, Germany, England, Scotland, Brazil, all over Africa. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me, and I'm very grateful to each one of you who are listening and who care enough to listen. So thank you so much, Anne, for calling in, and we'll go on.
Hi, Eric. This is Lisa Eister, and I live in Clemson, South Carolina. I just wanted to ask how the art of storytelling with Brother Wolf began and why you started the podcast. And I also wanted to wish you the best on your 100th episode, and I hope there are 100 more to come, and just tell you that I know no other resource that is as wonderful as your podcast. I direct the storytellers in my local guild, the Clemson Area Storytellers, to your podcast all the time. It's a wonderful resource for beginning storytellers and professional storytellers alike, and I really do appreciate it and wish you all the best.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for calling in. Well, The Art of Storytelling was originally born as the Storytelling with Children show, and I really quickly discovered that Storytelling with Children's show was very confusing to people because I thought I was talking about the art form and everybody else thought I was talking about telling stories with children. So very quickly, the name of the show changed to The Art of Storytelling with Children. And over the last 100 episodes, the focus has clearly shifted to basically the art of storytelling as we all know it. And more than half the shows don't even touch on working with children in any way, shape, or form. So I decided about show 80 to change the name of the show, and which is why on the first 80 shows, if you listen to them, it says, Welcome to the Art of Storytelling with Children. And I may go back through the catalog and change all that. I did do a major edit this past August, so I am not really that excited about editing every single show all over again. But to get to your question of why it started, I started the show in 2007 because I really wanted to be involved in the wider storytelling community, and I was searching for a way of influencing that community. And I have a fairly young face. I'm turned 40 this past January. I look young, and in the storytelling community, there's a tendency to recognize people who look older, who the world may have worn on more. And so there are 40-year-old or mid-40 people who are very well respected in the community and well known and are good storytellers. Now, I happen to be a good storyteller, but my medicine and my gift is working with children, and I look like a very young man. You know, sometimes people quote me my age is 29, and they're not being polite. They're really serious. Or I've been mistaken by even older folks as being in my early 20s on some occasions. So I have this gift of looking young, but as a storyteller, I find it a little frustrating. And as a dyslexic person, I'm not very good at creating newsletters. You know, I tried creating newsletters and nothing really worked, and it just wasn't working because I am not a written person. I'm not a person of letters. I am an oral speaker. I speak from my heart, and I'm good at it. And I'm good at telling stories, and I can hold an audience of 1,000 grade school children for an hour. How do I communicate that to a school when what they want is a letter, and they want a showcase, and they want
advertising materials, and they want, you know, all these things that are really painful and difficult for me to create. And so this show began as a mastermind group. I started out interviewing people in the community that I thought would be really interesting to interview. And I didn't imagine it would be turn into an encyclopedia of those interviews. I just thought, well, I'm going to keep the interviews and I'll put them up, and maybe over time there'll be some interest. But what's happened is that this website, theartofstorytellingshow.com, has become one of the top storytelling websites in the world. Now, that process was interrupted when I changed the URL recently in October with the name change. But before I changed the URL, before I changed the domain name, the website was one of the top websites in the world for a go-to place about storytelling. And that will return in a few months. Probably by the time you're listening to this, and months hence, it may have already changed and already come back, the Google love. And so when you look for something on storytelling, you'll find one of my interviews. You know, this is how you find out about Jack Zipes, or this is how you find out about Diane Williams, or this is how you hear Doug Littman's thoughts on marketing, or this is how you hear Mary Hamilton's thoughts on coaching. It definitely has evolved, and it's become a little bit of a wild ride, and I'm really glad I'm in for it, because I believe that the storytelling community has something to offer the rest of the world, and I believe that we could do a better job of showing ourselves to the world, and I decided to take on that job. I wouldn't say that's what I initially signed up for, but that's definitely what I'm in for now. Anyway, it's a great question. Thanks, Lisa.
Hi, this is Mary Hamilton. I'm a co-founder of WOW, Working on Our Work Storytelling Weekends, and you are listening to me on The Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf.
Hello, this is Fiona Jane Brown from Aberdeen in Scotland, and I'm a storyteller, and my group is the Grampian Association of Storytellers, and our website is Grampian Storytellers, that is all one word, Grampian, Grampian Storytellers, .org.uk. And my question is, I am very interested in true life stories, and I would like to know if you think it is very important to get children to learn to tell stories about everyday life as much as it is to get them to learn folk tales and fairy tales, and hopefully you'll ask this question and I'll hear your answer sometime. Good luck, and we'll always like to hear what storytellers are doing all over the world, and that's everything. Thank you. Bye.
Fiona, I want you to know that when I got your message, I leaped for joy, because it was so exciting to get my first message from overseas, from someone who was not living in the States, as we say. To answer your question, of course, yeah, man, go, all sorts of storytelling. Kids should be doing it all. I think that telling what happened to us. Okay, I was doing this little residency in this school, and they couldn't really do a full residency, so we did a 3-hour thing, which I don't really consider a real residency, but it was pretty real for the kids that were there. What we did was I told stories to the whole school in groups of 200, and then they picked out a volunteer from every class who wanted to learn more about storytelling, and we sat in a circle for 3 hours. Now, my goal had been to have them tell fairy tales, and they were going to do some coaching and stuff, but what happened is somehow we drifted into accidents, and the kids all started to tell true stories, you know, well, oh, and I had this happen to me, and I had a spike in my foot, and oh, yeah, and there was this cool, I broke my arm, and let me tell you how I broke it. It was hilarious, and it was great, and it was very healthy, because when children talk about what happened to them, they build emotional confidence, and they build their ability to deal with the world, and they also process emotionally what happened to them. I believe, and in all the settings where I ever had situations where I was in charge of children, I always had a space where children were allowed to express themselves freely of what had happened to them, and we're allowed to talk about it. I've always believed in the power of one good listener. All you need is one good listener, and all that pain will go away. So I guess I was talking about stories about people's traumas and working through stuff, but you're also asking about just stories of life, and I think those are great too. I think it's important to understand that children have a different agenda than adults, and you know, when I say talking about stories of life, I think there are certain types of stories that we as adults are very interested in and children have no interest at all. And I just think it's important that we let them do whatever they want to do. If they want to be creative, be creative. If they want to do the truth, do the truth. You know, whatever you're going to do, let them experiment with whatever style of storytelling they're really interested in. The key idea being that they need to be telling stories. They need to be experimenting. They need to be trying different things. And that's what play is about. That's what being a child is about, is discovering who we are.
Aloha. This is Jeff Gear calling from the middle of the Pacific, Hawaii, where indeed Eric Wolf stayed in my backyard at the end of the Talk Story Conference for a week. And after the official presentations were done, gee whiz, did we talk. If you want to know more about Jeff Gear, it's at www.jeffgear.com, J-E-F-F-G-E-R-E.com, where we present the Talk Story Festival every October. You're invited to come. So now, Eric, on the eve of this celebration of 100 podcasts interviewing the best and the brightest of the storytelling world nationally and actually internationally, I have a question for you. How have these podcasts changed you in your storytelling practice and also in your personal dealings with the world around you? How has this process affected you, dear Eric? Please do tell us. We're waiting to hear.
I want the listeners to know that the Jeff you're hearing on the telephone there is the same Jeff that I got to hang out with for a week. I mean, he's very consistent all the way through, you know, one ball of fire constantly. How has it changed me? Well, I think that before I began this project, I was very much in the traditional storytelling camp. And I think that this project, as it's continued, has made me much more willing to use every aspect of storytelling available to me. And that I'm much more willing to abandon even the term storyteller. And I've begun to understand that the word storytelling is a huge word. And it's as big as the word human. And somebody asked me, what is a storyteller? Just last week. And I said, well, you know, what is a storyteller? Well, a storyteller is someone who tells stories. And there are as many ways to tell stories as there are people in the world. For each person has their own unique way and style of telling stories that only they can do. Now, I know many people who tell stories like each other or influenced by each other, but when you start letting them evolve to their natural endpoint as they get more and more developed in their telling, you will see that they become unique. They become completely different. And I think that this project has allowed me to stand back and to see that uniqueness, that beauty, that tapestry that is life is reflected in our stories and is reflected in our storytelling. That we as storytellers are a reflection of the amazing diversity that is the world. Now, sometimes in marketing, it's much easier to sell something that is familiar. So there are certain types of stories that travel really well, or there are certain types of storytelling that festivals pick up really well. And so many people copy that because they want to be telling stories. But when you look at what is a successful storyteller, ultimately, that is somebody who is really true to their own identity. And if they're lucky, that identity is close to some of these brands, these genres of storytelling, quote unquote, tall tales, family stories, Greek myths, that are sort of more popular on the national stage within the storytelling community. Understand that within the storytelling community is 1% of 1% of 1% of the population of the United States. So really, to answer your question, this project has raised me up from a journeyman towards mastery. I dare not call myself a master storyteller. But I'm getting there.
Hi, this is Mylinda Butterworth. I am here in Pasadena, Maryland. You can find me on the web at storymasters.org. But the question I have for you, Eric, is, can you tell us more about EcoTales? I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there telling stories about the environment, but what is it, and where do you find, and how do you connect? One more thing. Eric, I love what you do. I love how you connect people from all around the world with storytelling. And finally, I hope that those of you around will take the opportunity to come to Florida Story Camp, which is the last weekend of March. We have National Storytellers coming, just wonderful people, Dan Ketting, Susan Klein, Diane Delacassis, plus Ethnotech, and we just have a wonderful time, great workshops, and you can find more about us at flstory.org. Thanks for letting me take the time to talk to you, Eric. I'll talk to you soon. Lots of story hugs. Bye for now.
Hey, Melinda, thank you so much for saying such nice things. This would be a great time to mention that in just a few weeks from the publication, the first publication of this episode is going to be the Eco Storytelling Retreat. And if you type into any search box in Google, Eco space Storytelling space Retreat space 2010, the top result will be the website for this retreat. And you should go there and check it out. As for your question, eco stories, what are eco stories? An environmental story is a story that teaches us about our environment. That's really lame answer, isn't it? But that's really the bones of it. That's really the truth of it. In many ways, in a culture that is growing more and more disconnected with its rural roots and more disconnected with its understanding of impact it is having on the environment around it and the environment it's dependent on for its existence, eco-storytelling is becoming more and more essential to the survival of the human race. Telling stories that help us to feel empowered about environmental issues and politics are incredibly important and very rare. Most eco-storytelling that I see is fear-based and spectacularly unsuccessful at changing behaviors. So I personally have an obsession with discovering and finding environmental stories that have the ability to both inspire and change behavior in a positive way.
Hello, Eric. This is Donna Washington. I'm living here in beautiful Durham, North Carolina. My website is donnawashington.com, and I'm calling with a comment, and that is that it is amazing to me that you have contributed so much to so many people in this field. People, getting people in contact with each other and letting people who know about storytelling and who want to know about storytelling connect so that they can ask each other questions, so that they can talk and just benefit everybody who touches story. So thank you so very much and keep on doing what you do. Bye.
Thank you, Donna. Donna Washington is one of the world's best ghost storytellers, hands down. And I know there are a lot of really good ghost storytellers who listen to this show, so I'm feeling a little bit of heat right now. But she is really, really good. And if you have the opportunity to see her, she's worth the 3-hour drive, or 4-hour drive, 5-hour drive. Okay, she's that good. Thank you, Donna. I am really glad you appreciate the show. And I'm really glad that you, like many other people who listen to the show, actually link to the show's website, which is artofstorytellingshow.com. Because in the Google universe, links are what matter. Words are nice, but Google only recognizes links. So if you have a website and you're listening to my voice and you like this show, please make sure you link to this show from your website. Now, every once in a while, someone will call me and say, if you want me to link to from my website to yours, then you have to link from your website to mine. I say, that's really nice, but I have 1,000 listeners. And if I put 1,000 links on my website to all those other websites, it just doesn't work like that. I've spent 3 years now working on the show, giving these great things. I would like to think that's worth something, you know, that you appreciate this. What I'm giving you here, that maybe if you listen to 10 hours, that you're willing to take 10 minutes and give me a link, you know, and help other people find the show, that would be awesome. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Tim Araneta calling from Berkeley, California. And I have a little blog on the internet called Breaking the Eggs, which is at storytelling.blogspot.com. And as you know, Eric, Breaking the Eggs is a blog about performance storytelling in the 21st century. And the title comes from the saying, you can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs. So I just wanted to say congratulations, Eric, on your 100th episode of The Art of Storytelling. And I want to thank you personally for being someone who's willing to stir the pot, crack some shells, do things a little differently to make that omelet. I've been a listener from the beginning of your podcast, and I'm a longtime fan of storytelling and a longtime fan of the internet and how it allows people to connect and collaborate. So when I first discovered your podcast and that you were using it, not to tell stories, but to share the knowledge and wisdom of the storytelling community, you could have knocked me down with a feather. It's such a simple idea, but it's so brilliant. Just to go out to interview the amazing artists and minds in our community and to share those interviews with the rest of the world for free? Thank you, Eric. So I do have a question, but it's not for you. It's for those storytellers and artists who have that you've approached, and they're still sitting on the fence saying, do I really want to be interviewed by Eric Wolf? Let me ask them this. How many people can you reach in a given year with your workshops, your classes, and your lectures talking about storytelling? How many people is that? And then ask Eric, how many people can he reach on a bad day, on a bad download day? I'm going to guess it's 10 times that number. So, Eric, how many people listen to a typical episode? Keep up the good work and keep on breaking those eggs.
Well, Tim, in the last 6 weeks, I've had 9,429 downloads. I would like to say that's 9,000 people listening to the show, but really it's not. Statistically, you just basically 70% of that number. So about 7,000 people have tuned in over the last 6 weeks. That's pretty amazing. I didn't realize the number was that high. I don't think that's reasonable. I think I'm counting wrong. Let's be really, let's say 5,000 people tuned in the last 6 weeks. Because, you know, I think I could be shooting a little high. But my surveys show, I'm not going to go into mathematics, but basically 5,000 to 7,000 people. It's really difficult to tell exactly the number. But I know that 9,400 hours were listened to. And if you were to pick one particular day, you know, what's one particular day? I think the worst day, bad day, was 100 downloads, about 100 people, you know, just one day of the show. How much listened to one episode? Well, the most listened to episodes approaching about 3,000, and I think that's Brother Blues. There are some accounting issues. I had to switch servers, and I lost track at some points. But Brother Blues episode is very well listened to, and it's great listening, and you should listen to it. Most episodes get anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 listeners. And right now they're running about 1,500 over a three-month period. Now, what's really unusual about my show and totally different is that it's become an encyclopedia. So most podcasts in the industry, you post a show and it sort of has an attraction factor, sort of a time when people listen, and then after 2 weeks, it's over. Most people aren't downloading anymore, but not this show. I have more people download the old shows on any given day than downloading the current show. And what that tells me is that if you are a guest on my show and I have that show posted, when someone types your name in the internet and they're trying to find out about you, they find my interview with you, and I cast you in the best light possible. And you look really good. Type in Bill Lepp, storyteller. You'll see Bill Lepp's website and his interview on my show. And that's a great interview about how to lie and not get caught. It's an amazing interview. And I can bet you that now, from now on, when anybody types in Bill Lepp to find out if they want to hire him, they're going to see an interview. And a lot of those people are going to listen to that interview, and they're going to be like, wow, he's great. I'm going to hire this guy. When they might not have before, because they've never seen him. They just heard about him. It just brings my guests that much closer to their potential gigs. I have at least 10 guests who have called me and said, Eric, I didn't know when I got on this, but I know now your show got me this gig. And that's amazing to me, because this is an implication that I just didn't consider when I started this project. You know, I started this project for other reasons. You know, I just, my own reason, I just wanted to work on, I wanted to learn more. I wanted to do, I didn't think of it as creating an encyclopedia. That wasn't my intention. You listen to the first show, you can tell that's not my intention. My intention was to build a community of people who are following the show and are taking part in every show. And that's sort of been created different times and different places, but it's never really held true. What has been interesting for me is the way the show has built as a source of the storytelling community, as a representation. And so the question I have also for those who have turned me down, and there's probably four very famous storytellers who have turned me down. No, six very famous storytellers who turned me down. And I could list them. You'd know their names. Why? Well, the first reason given is they don't understand the technology. All right. I explain it to them. The second reason given is that they have to sign a contract when they come on my show. Well, that's fine. They don't want to sign a contract. I mean, that's what a business relationship is. When you have a relationship with somebody, you define it very clearly. And I like to have really clear relationships with people. So some people don't want to sign the contract. Maybe they don't sign book contracts either. I don't know. Anyway, there you go, Tim. I hope that's helpful. And, oh, by the way, folks, Tim Arnetta has a new website out called Story Lab X. It is amazing. You should Google it. Story, space, lab, space, X, all capitalized. So that's a capitalized story, capitalized lab, and the capitalized X. And you will find this cool site. It's just a list of videos. And you should go to his website and check it out. But after you finish listening to this interview.
Hi, this is Judith Alexander, and I live part-time in Munich, Germany, and part-time in Seattle, where my guild can be found at www.seattlestorytelling.org. Eric, how long are you going to keep up these podcasts? That's the question, and the comment is, I listen to them on my iPod when I'm on public transportation in Germany, since we take the train into town 20 minutes at a time. And it spoils my German because I'm listening to you and all your wonderful guests in English. But I love being so inspired by your show. Thanks so much.
You speak me Deutsch? I don't. I love Europe. I spent most of my childhood refighting World War II in a various set of games, both real and imagined, in terms of war games. And that was a long time ago. So the geography of Europe is very familiar to me. And I just enjoyed hearing that you're in Germany listening to my show. And it's just, I thought it was, it's really nice to hear. So thank you for calling. I really appreciate, by the way, the 40%, the 600 people who are overseas, who are going to be listening to this show. And I just want to say thank you for being a listener. And I really appreciate the fact that you're listening. And I understand that a lot of the focus of the show is sort of the American point of view, because it's difficult sometimes for me to get contact with the international audience. And I'm doing my best to change that, to have more international guests on. In fact, upcoming next show is the head of the International Storytelling Festival. And I have a show coming up with an Israeli storyteller, and I'm looking forward to other shows with more of an international feel, though it can be very difficult at times to get those guests lined up. To get back to your question, how many shows do I plan on doing? Well, I planned on doing 100, and this is the 100th show, so that's it. Just kidding. I don't know. It really depends on financing. It depends on if the business model works. And if I can make it work. Currently, it's a lot of work for not a lot of reward. I'm hoping that it will become more rewarding. Meaning that I'm hoping that the launch of the International Storytelling School, which hopefully you already listened to the ad, it's been inserted in this program already. But if this is later and the ad's no longer inserted, the International Storytelling School is at www.thestorytellingschool.com, and I'm telling the audience of my podcast that if you believe in the project that I'm doing, and if you want to continue to support the work of this podcast, of this show, to please buy in as a member of the school, the storytelling school, for $10 a month. And that number may go up over time. You listen to this in years hence, I don't know. But currently, that's $10 a month. And if you buy in now, it's the price you pay. And what do you get for that? Well, you get to support the show. That's what I'm asking you to do. But you also get access to finished coaching sessions with some of the master teachers. And that's sort of a bonus. Now, that bonus probably won't kick in for a couple months, but right now, that's what you get if you sign up. You get to support the show and to know that the art of storytelling will continue. And $10 a month, it's here in the States, that's, two deli sandwiches, taking me out to lunch twice, maybe with a soda on the side. Unless, of course, you're living in New York, in which case it's just one deli sandwich and one soda on the side. The point here is this show requires a huge investment of my time, and I'm looking at focusing on other things because there's only so many hours I can spend on it, and I would rather, honestly, be just doing this. I would rather be doing this for the 30 hours a week I've been putting into it, and I've been cutting back more and more over the last months because it's rewarding, but without the financial support, I have to do other things. That's the reality of it. If you're not already a member of the International Storytelling School, I would ask you to go and to sign up now. And here's the problem. I know from all the research I've done that 40% of you, that's 4 out of 10 of you, and that's you probably listening to me right now, will say, that's great, I'll do that. That's a wonderful idea. And you'll write it down on your little pad, and you will never go. And I know you're saying, no, that's not me. No, I'll do it. I'll do it. No. You do it now. Now, right? Right now, if you mean it. Otherwise, don't pretend. It just hurts my feelings and makes me feel, left out and forgotten. Just that little boy in the rain. Anyway, thanks so much for calling, Judith. I really appreciate that you're listening, and I hope someday to maybe I'll throw in some German.
This is Doug Elliott, and you're listening to The Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf.
I've reached the point in the show where I say, do you have an offer? And my guest responds with an offer. Yes, in fact, I do. Usually my guest says, well, I have a free email course, or I have this or that or this website. As you may know, my website is ericwolf.org. If you haven't been there yet, go over there and check it out. I have a number of different projects going on, and I welcome you to go look at them and learn about what they are. In particular, the Eco Storytelling Retreat is a big project coming up real close in the close term. So if you're listening to the show right now, go over there and check out that website. If it's past the beginning of April, and you're listening to this years hence, I have a number of resources on ericwolf.org. You can go to that website, go to the resource section of the website on top of the page. It'll say resources, and there's a number of different email courses, free email courses you can sign up for. I have the podcast, which you already know about because you're listening to it right now, but if you for some reason have this disc from someone else and you don't know about the website, you can go to artofstorytellingshow.com. But the biggest offer I have right now is that everyone listening to this is welcome to go to thestorytellingschool.com and sign up to be a student with one of these master teachers. These are amazing storytellers. They are the best of the best. And I have taken all the extra stuff you don't really need when learning something, and I've gotten rid of it. And only what's left is the finest meat. No bones, no feathers, just the meat of how to be a storyteller, of how to actually tell a story, and most importantly, of how to get better at telling a story. So if that interests you, go to thestorytellingschool.com, pick out the master teacher you want to work with, and sign up on the apprentice level to work with one of those master teachers. It's an amazing opportunity. And each of the master teachers are only allowed 2 students for the first few months. We'll see how it goes from there, and maybe we'll increase that number. So there's only two spots to work with Judith Black. There's only two spots to work with Mitch Capel, Granddaddy Junebug. There's only two spots to work with Heather Forrest. There's only two spots to work with Jeff Gere. How could you not work with Jeff Gere? There's only two spots to work with Bill Lepp. Only two people will be allowed to work with Bill Lepp for the next 30 days, 60 days. There's only two spots for Lauren Neamey. There's only two spots for David Novak, the David Novak. There's only two spots for Limor Schipponi. Israeli storyteller. How many opportunities do you have to work with an Israeli storyteller? There's only two spots to work with Medicine Story. Medicine Story, the Native American storyteller out of New England. Bob knows Medicine Story. And there's only five spots to work with me because I can handle the complexity of the technology. I'm starting out with five people. Only five spots. The first people who get in, they get the spots. They get this payment level forever, for as long as they're at that level and paying per monthly. Doesn't matter how much the fees go up, they pay at this level. And that's true when you're listening to this. That's true. It doesn't matter when you listen to this, how many spots are left. Doesn't matter. What matters is whatever amount is listed on that registration page, when you sign up, that's the amount you pay. And if it increases, your payment does not increase. There is one problem that most storytellers have, and we've discussed this already in the show, and there's one really big problem, and that is we don't have contact. We don't have the ability to sit down with a master storyteller and to be given direct and meaningful feedback in a useful way that gives us what we need as a storyteller to get better. But now we do, and that's because of this school. And as you heard, there's only so much room. So if you're serious about being a better storyteller, if you're real about wanting to have that support of having that connection with some of the best storytellers on the planet, then you should sign up. And that's my offer. This is the opportunity. You're a listener. You get the first shot. You know, I mean, soon enough, we're going to open it up to a wider audience than just the show. Only 1,500 people listen to this, and there's only, what, 20 spots? So you get the mathematics, right? We've reached that part of the show where I say to my guest, Brother Wolf, do you have some final thoughts for the international storytelling community? And my guest says, you know, Eric, that's funny. I do have a few thoughts that come to mind from taking part in recording this show. And I guess the first thought is that storytelling is a communal activity. Storytelling is something that requires a group. It requires an audience, and it requires a speaker. Storytelling is a group effort. It requires active listening and active speaking. This podcast is just like storytelling in many ways. It needs to be fed with willing ears. And so I think that what comes out of this recording the show today is just realizing how much I, as the creator of this podcast, am dependent on you, the audience. For I could have these shows and no one could listen, and that would just not really fit the bill. It just wouldn't work. And so I really say thank you. Thank you so much for being a listener. I really appreciate the fact, especially those listeners who listened to all 100 episodes. I'm really blown away that people have spent 100 hours with me. That's just amazing. Thank you so much. And storytelling is also an active art. It requires active listening. And so if you want to take the next step, if you want to build this community stronger, I invite you, if you listened to an episode and you had some thoughts you wanted to share, you had some ideas you wanted to talk about, I invite you to find that page for that episode on the website, Art of Storytelling. You just go to Art of Storytelling, look at the archive show link, and go down the show link and find that show and click on the page, open the page up, and there'll be a comment bar on the bottom, and write your comment in. I enjoyed listening to Jack Zipes. He was amazing, and his commentary on fairy tales was brilliant. Whatever it is, you know, I liked listening to Baba Jamal, but, you know, there's one aspect of what he said that really bothered me, and I want to talk about that. I just would invite you to come into the conversation, to be a part of what you've been building by listening, because you deserve to enjoy the full benefits of being a part of this community. This ends the first part of three separate episodes celebrating the 100th episode of The Art of Storytelling. Episodes 100, episodes 101, episode 102 are all recordings of audience questions answered by me, Brother Wolf. So come back for the next two, and I'm looking forward to hearing your ears, listening to mine, on The Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf Show. This guest has written a post for the blog that can be read at www.artofstorytellingshow.com. This post includes a bio and a link to the guest's website, plus other additional information about our discussion. If you want to respond to this show, you can find this post and share your thoughts through the comment system in the blog comment box. If you wish to join a future show as an audience member, go to www.artofstorytellingshow.com/alerts and sign up to the email alert system. You can buy CDs of shows and preloaded iPods on the website. The music was created by Mary Kay Croft, and we are much indebted to her contribution. The show is produced and hosted by me, Brother Wolf, and I am responsible for its content. It is released under a Creative Commons non-derivative and non-commercial license. That means you can copy it and you can give it away, but you can't splice it up or sell it. High-definition versions of this show are considered copyrighted, all rights reserved. Tuck me into bed. There was some-